enjoy a good squeeze.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Margo.
And I'm August.
And this is A Good Squeeze.
The show where we squeeze a little bit of that James Bond into our everyday lives.
That's right. And today we're doing it different, the same as always.
The same as always.
But unique this time. But how?
I'll tell you how. We are talking 007, but in home media. And we can't do it alone. We need a special guest, someone who I've enjoyed talking to about tapes, about movies, about media in general. Kyle Barbeau of Easy Smiles and Expensive Watches. Thank you for being on the show. Welcome, Kyle.
Thank you for having me. I feel like we've had this date for a long time. So I'm very tickled that you asked me to be on the show.
We are tickled that you're here.
We're very happy.
So happy.
I'm not tickled.
Very
I'm happy, just
happy to be here.
Yeah, I mean, we're friends. I don't know if we're that close. We'll get there.
So, you know, about a year ago, we met and got to talking at that Bond and Beyond event last mm-hmm. year. And shortly after, we found out we had a common interest of movies, pro wrestling.
Space.
And the conversations have been going for a year. And now, hey, I say we're friends. Do you agree?
I would agree with that.
Now that I have you trapped.
It's like kindergarten. Like, do you want to be my friend? Like, there we go.
You like grape soda? I like grape soda. We're best friends.
But as we said today, the theme is home videos.
Home media.
Okay, sorry. Home media, which is a very popular form of, you know, consuming media for our age. You know, we had the means, as in, like, you know, we had the resources available to us to put in a VHS, which is not so much the case for the older generation. It's not, and even for the newer generation, it's very streaming. I feel like this is a very our age group specific memory. Like, this is reserved for us and no one else. We're very unique because we're the only ones who did this. Yeah.
But I want to ask you the first question. This is Kyle Memories right out the gate. You know, what was your first memory of experiencing a Bond film, like outside of the theater, but like at home, whether it was television or a VHS or whatever other format? But what made it memorable?
Laserdisc.
Yeah. What made it memorable and what was it?
The first time I ever encountered a James Bond movie at home, and it would have been the first time I ever encountered a James Bond movie, period, was on TBS, the Superstation. In the mid to late 1990s, they used to do this thing in between Thanksgiving and Christmas every year, 15 days of 007. And they would show all of the Bond movies in a very random, haphazard order. It didn't really matter. I mean, you could be watching Live and Let Die, and then the next one would be Thunderball, and then after that would be Living Daylights. And the first one I ever saw was License to Kill. And I feel like that one was on TV a lot in the 90s because it was still kind of the new one-ish. You know, we'd only had GoldenEye since License to Kill, and that was still too new to hit cable TV. So the new one that cable could show at the time was License to Kill, believe it or not. So I saw that one from a very young age, and I remember my dad having me cover my eyes when Milton Crest dies. And
I do that now. I cover my eyes.
It's pretty rough.
I haven't seen that one.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. That's the one where the guy's head blows up.
Yeah.
Who?
It's pretty dark.
Which one?
License to Kill, where they run real funny in the beginning.
Oh, I don't remember.
Yes, in slow motion.
God, I don't remember that, unfortunately.
It was a couple years ago.
Yeah. Didn't I fall asleep for that one?
Yes.
It was too violent for me.
It's definitely the most violent Bond film, at least until Quantum of Solace.
Okay.
For sure. And so that was the first one I saw, and I would get into a lot of them. I watched that one. I watched I remember Spy Who Loved Me being an early one I watched that made a big impression, and Thunderball being an early one that I saw that made an early impression. And then when Tomorrow Never Dies hit the big screen and I got to see that, that's what really blew me up into the Bond fan that I am now. But it started at home, and it started with TBS, with 15 Days of 007. Specifically, the ones I remember the most were License to Kill, Spy Who Loved Me, and Thunderball.
And this is alongside, you said your dad told you you had to close your eyes, so I'm assuming he was watching with you. Is that the?
Yeah, yeah, okay, he used to watch. I mean, he's like the typical dad who just, dads like James Bond movies, but I mean, as far as the passion for bondage, as we'll call it. Yeah. No, that sounds wrong. That's the passion for Bond mania, for Bondiana.
Nice.
I mean, I took that and ran with it much further than any of my friends and acquaintances and family members and loved ones ever have.
I'm glad you brought up, and that was your first experience, was those 15 days of 007. Because I had that in my life at an early age too. That's what really like sparked my Bond fandom, was being able to access Bond mm-hmm. at an early age at that time, because, you know, we've said it before, grew up in the woods, and, you know, we didn't really have access to all these films. Like, it was a very special occasion where we got to go to like a Hollywood Video and rent maybe a Bond movie, or even go to like something like an FYE and buy a Bond movie. But, you know, myself, I came to Bond, we'll say, a little late ish. It was 1997. Yes. It was mm-hmm. that video game GoldenEye. But after telling my parents I am obsessed with this game at 7 years old, we were a part of some VHS mailing service. They would like send a box of like monthly VHSs.
What a time to be alive.
I remember those. It was like Columbia House or something like that.
Something. I know. Yeah. I know one of these boxes had GoldenEye though. And nice. We watched it. And I remember that was my first exposure to Bond in general, other than the video game, but GoldenEye, the movie, at home. And I remember being pissed that, Pierce Brosnan didn't have golden eyes. I was so confused. I'm like, this is GoldenEye. Why doesn't he have golden eyes? But shortly after that, we would have gone into the 15 days of 007. And also my father was fanning the flame and showing us those marathons was really what sparked the interest for sure.
Do you still watch Bond movies with your family?
Occasionally. Usually Thanksgiving is a good day for James Bond, and I'll bring over my my Blu-ray box set, and then the way that we've done it the last handful of years is I will let somebody else choose the actor, and then I will choose the film. So, like, you know, usually it's my mother or one of my sisters, because, you know, the ladies like who they like, gets to choose the actor, and then that narrows it down. And then, okay, you've picked Roger Moore. Nobody ever picks Timothy Dalton. and then I'll say, okay, you picked Roger Moore. We're going to watch The Man with the Golden Gun. Just, you know, throwing
that's
that out there.
Such a, like, Bond community member move to be like, we're going to make a game out of this. Like,
yeah.
Which is, I mean, the essence of Bond. You can't just be like, I'd like to watch this movie. It's like, all right, well, what color's your underwear right now? Like, it's always some kind of little sneaky game.
Yeah.
Well, you need to involve the muggles a little bit. They have to be part of the decision process.
Yeah.
I like that. That's
good.
That's
sweet.
You know, you mentioned Blu-ray. How has your experience of Bond, you know, evolved over time? Whether, you know, we talked about being introduced with television and marathons. Like, did you grow up with them on VHS? Did you evolve to DVD, or did you skip that and just go right to those Blu-rays? Like, chronicle us. What has your evolution been like with Bond and physical media?
So I collected them in a kind of a hodgepodge manner. Growing up as a little kid, I would tape some of them off of TBS, which some of those I still have, and those are great to watch for the commercials. Yeah, I could fast forward through the films because I have them on so many formats now, but watching the time capsule that is the whatever commercial, whatever product they were pitching, whatever new movie was coming out in 1998, 1999. It's fascinating to watch. That's a good time. But I would tape some of them off of TBS, and then I would buy them when my budget would allow or when I had a patron, like a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle. And I would kind of pick them at random. And I know a lot of them I got from the Virgin Records megastore, which I don't even think such a thing exists anymore. I got a lot of them there. I bought a handful of them from Blockbuster Video when they used to sell their pre-owned or pre-viewed videotapes. I would buy them that way, especially some of the newer ones, because a new movie would come out, they'd buy dozens of copies. Then after it had been out for a year, they'd sell off all but one. So that was a good way to collect them. And then right around the time of Die Another Day is when I transitioned. I started buying the new film on DVD, but I never bought any of the box sets at the time. I kind of skipped the DVD collection. I just kept watching them on tape until 2012 when they came out with the Bond 50 Blu-ray box set. And that was the sign for me to upgrade my whole collection. I jumped from hodgepodge VHSs and some DVDs into the Blu-ray set. And that is typically how I watch them now, especially if I'm going to like really sit down and concentrate on a Bond movie as opposed to just having it on in the background. I'm going to put in the Blu-ray and make it as optimal an experience as I can.
I was going to say, like, do you ever want to go back and watch them on tape?
It's funny that you say that, because since becoming friends with the two of you, I've done that a lot, and I've done it when I'm falling asleep at night. I will pull out a Bond videotape, and some of them are starting to wear out, I've noticed, because I still have, from when I went away to college 20 years ago, I still have one of those TVs that has the built-in VCR and DVD player, and it's 20 years old, and it still works great. Nothing's wrong with it. People make fun of me that I still have it, but it works, and that's my bedroom TV, and I will, from time to time, pop in a James Bond videotape and turn the volume down low, but not off, and just let it, you know, kind of lull me into that cozy, comforting feeling that is a familiar Bond film. Right.
The visual crackle, like you can't hear it, but it kind of goes like, it's like La Cucaracha for James Bond for a second, like.
There's something cozy about watching Bond that way that high definition doesn't have, which, I mean, it is the better experience to watch a film, to see it in HD. But as far as like the coziness factor, videotape has a warmth that that HD does not.
It's, and so many movies were filmed anticipating that. So there's just certain details, and there's certain things that are done to accommodate this viewing, and it just looks better and feels right when you're watching it on VHS. I'm a firm believer of that. There's certain things, like, I mean, this is not Bond related, but like Dragon Ball Z, like things like that. I prefer watching them on DVD and VHS. I think those are like older, like Peter Pan, Robin Hood, like those movies. I'm like, I'd rather watch them on VHS. It just makes sense with every visual that that's presented to you. There's just a coziness, and there's like a, I don't know how to describe, like it feels tactile even though it's visual, and I just much prefer that. So I'm happy that you're doing that.
I'll throw another one at you, Margo. Ooh. I know you're a fellow Frasier fan, and I do that with Frasier as well, because I don't like those 90s sitcoms when they've upscaled them to HD and they spread them out into widescreen. It doesn't look right. It looks like stretchy and squishy, and it just looks wrong. Watching it in the pan and scan square aspect ratio actually looks better.
Yeah. And you can tell too, the way that it's filmed, the actors are rarely ever that far apart. They're always close together. It just makes more sense. Yeah. Oh, that's so great.
Frasier looks a lot better in the old SD than it does in HD, for sure.
That's awesome.
You know, I don't recall people complaining about Roger Moore's stunt double screen time in A View to a Kill they went high definition.
True. That's true.
They couldn't really see it.
Right. And even if you were watching it in widescreen, like in a movie theater, you can't pause it in a movie theater the way you can. A picture perfect pause on a Blu-ray or on streaming, you can really clearly spot when it's a stunt double. If you're watching it in a cinema in the dark and it's moving so quickly and you can't stop, those things kind of go right over your head.
Yeah. And I feel like once you've seen it 18,000 times, like you guys have, you do pick up on the small details.
That
but
too. That'll
yeah.
do it.
We,
don't get me started on when they've changed the sound effects.
We recently, don't ask why, but we recently watched, speaking of A View to a Kill, we watched A View to a Kill on three different formats mm-hmm. in the span of like 3 weeks. We watched it on Blu-ray. We streamed it and we watched it on VHS. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's nostalgia or if it's this warmth we're talking about, this coziness, but there is something special about those VHS tapes. And that was my favorite viewing of it, was when we watched it on the old tape.
I do think there's something about it too, where like that was kind of like our first leap into independence as a kid, you know, like you can put on your shoes by yourself and stuff. But what was really nice is like you could hit the button on the TV that turns it on. We didn't have to change HDMI, whatever this and that. It was built into the TV. You just pop it in, make sure it goes in the right way. Sometimes you learn the hard way and you mess it up and you jam it and whatever. But that's, you know, you make mistakes. It's fine. You figure it out. You put it in there yourself and the movie just starts. You don't have to press any buttons. It's two-step processing. It's perfect. Turn on, push in, sit down and wait. And then you just get to watch a movie and there's something so simple about it too. There's no overstimulation there because you had a few previews or commercials or trailers or whatever at the beginning of the VHS and then, or just jumped right into the movie. And then you just had the movie and that was it. There's something so simple and so like rewarding about it. Like putting in such little effort as an adult, but it's such a big effort for a child, you know, and that little, mm-hmm. little moment of independence where you got to, followed by escapism, that's something that sticks with you. Now, kids, it's like, even if you're doing it for the kid and you're trying to stream something, how many things are they seeing prior to actually choosing something? You got to turn on the TV and then you got to hit the app and then you got to, you know, go to the homepage and you got to hit the search bar and there are 18,000 things that pop up as they're watching you do this. Mm-hmm. The magic's not there. It's too overstimulating. We had like a ritual. Turn the TV on, push the thing in, sit back and relax. It's just that is embedded in our brains, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's we just subconsciously go back into this like feeling of full, just, I don't know how to like back into the womb, but better because you're watching a movie, you know,
the womb of a CRT TV.
Yeah. I don't know. Just, there's something about that. That's just so, it's so great. So beautiful. I miss VHS so much.
It does my heart good that you even all in 2026, you fall asleep to James Bond on VHS.
And this is only because of my friendship with you. You're the one who gave me the idea.
You know,
but it's true. It really does feel good. You, Margot's right. There's something tactile to watching it on videotape as opposed to an HD. It's kind of like the difference between listening to an old album on vinyl as opposed to Apple Music or Spotify or whatever. And you know, newer music sounds fine that way, but anything that was recorded in the 60s and 70s and designed to be released on vinyl will sound better on vinyl. It has just warmth that streaming music just doesn't have.
100%.
You know, I similar boat, grew up making a hodgepodge VHS collection. Whether it was a birthday or, like I said, visiting like an FYE, something like that. It was a rare thing, but we would collect them. Did tape also some, you know, 15 Days of 007. I used to have a Moonraker and Fear Eyes Only like tape that like fizzled out for Fear Eyes Only. I wish I still had that because I remember you and I were chatting about the commercials.
So much fun.
I wish I had this. We side tangent. We have Batman the Animated Series, like a marathon taped. And nice. I still have that, and I love those old toy commercials specifically.
And I'll make a case too for commercials versus ads. You know, like we grew up with commercials. There's mm-hmm. something a little bit more cinematic than that. Now ads, it's the same plaque psoriasis thing 16 times, sometimes back to back. And then there's Domino's and Wingstop. No, yeah, is it Wingstop? Yeah. And it's just the same thing every single time. I'm like, show me. And here's the thing, like, there used to be repetition with commercials. And then you would, like, you know, sing along or talk along or, you know, whatever. Like, I'm remembering the, like, Comcast commercials.
I have a structured settlement and I need cash now.
Exactly. Exactly. I can't put my finger on why commercials are better than ads. I really, truly can't. Maybe it's because the pharmaceutical companies have just completely taken over it. That's okay. You know, do what you got to do. C'est la vie, as the French say.
We have a really good friend who made commercials for a pharmaceutical company.
Oh, great. Okay. You know what?
Let's not put that down too much.
All I'm saying is you got to do what you got to do. Times are moving. But like, it's one of those things where like, you know, when you're thinking back, I'm thinking about like the Turtles for Comcast. Like those guys ruled. Freaking El Mula. Do you guys remember that commercial?
No.
Never mind. Anyways, I'm sidetracking. Commercials, there's just something so cozy about them. And you don't get that anymore.
Let me reel it back to Bond.
You get to go to the bathroom during the commercials. You can't do that with ads. Reel it back
to Bond. After the tapes, yeah, that, you know, that Blu-ray set you're talking about, I miss that too. I got the DVD version. And
who's that? What that is?
Yeah, that like okay. book. And that was my Bond viewing for years and years and years. And that's what I would pop in to fall asleep to, is those discs. But as the Blu-ray holder, there was something special, and I didn't find this out until honestly a few years ago. But those bonus features, how did those bonus features, and whether it's on those discs or just documentaries in general, how do those collector's editions, we'll say, how do they change the way fans connect with 007, at least in your mind?
Well, you certainly learn a lot more about the behind the scenes stuff, about some of the casting process, the production, a lot of the trivia. That's for like the real fans who want to get deep into the story behind the making of the Bond films. And it can often be quite fascinating. I didn't know until fairly recently that Sean Connery's guest at the premiere of Diamonds Are Forever was Roger Moore. I mean, it was just that well established. It was just kind of like everybody already knew who the next guy was going to be. There was no bad blood. There was no mystery. There was no sort of controversy about who the next James Bond should be. It was like Sean Connery just brought him along with him. Like, here he is. Here's my buddy Raj, and he's ready to take the baton from me and run with it. And I love some of the behind the scenes documentaries on the older Bond films that are narrated by Patrick McNee. I just think he's the perfect guy to do that because he's a great side character in A View to a Kill, and he sort of has that aristocratic Englishman voice that when he narrates them, it sounds really good. It just sounds posh and it sounds polished. It sounds very much of the James Bond world. So I would highly recommend those if anybody hasn't seen them.
Yeah. Margo got me that Blu-ray set just a few years ago.
I think, who cares? Sorry. Yeah. I was about to take too long to remember.
But yeah, I didn't get to experience those bonus features until, you know, maybe like 6 years ago or so. And just because I just had those DVDs and I was fine with them. I had the VHS tapes. I was fine with them. But, you know, when it comes to other media, whether we've said marathons, we said DVDs, we said Blu-rays, how do you feel about the streaming side of 007? Have you partaken in popping it on Amazon or Netflix or whenever you can?
Sometimes, but that's not my preferred way to watch them. That's a great way to watch Bond, like in a hotel. You could just, if when they're on Netflix, which occasionally they are, occasionally they're not, you can pop them on Netflix, or you could load them up on your phone before a flight. That's kind of nice. It's a good, like, if you taking Bond away from home, if you need your fix, you want to put a movie on in the background at work, that sort of thing. That's a good way to experience it. But it's not how I would sit down and focus on a Bond movie. And if I'm gonna really concentrate, like I'm gonna watch it, then I would rather put in a disc. And you brought up the special features, and that's something that I think streaming, we're losing with the move towards streaming. I mean, nobody's making those featurettes anymore. Nobody's making a 90-minute behind the scenes documentary about the making of No Time to Die. Well, maybe No Time to Die, but I don't know that is being done about most contemporary movies.
I feel like
think that's going away.
I feel like at this point it's being done for marketing purposes. It's usually like the Harry Potter series that's coming out. They just came out with a documentary on how they're making it, but the thing hasn't come out yet. So they want people to watch it to incentivize them to watch them, rather than it being kind of hidden, like kind of in with it. You know, you watch
after the
it
fact.
Exactly, yeah. And like appreciating and like I want more, and then you get that additional piece, and as a result, but it's not the same. It's not the same when it's being used for marketing purposes rather than for just entertainment and enjoyment. Jeez,
it's they used to be to give the super fans a little extra helping, you know, have a little dessert after watching the movie. You love it so much, you want more of it. Well, here's this little featurette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Bond related, but I remember for the DVD of Shark Tale. Yeah. There was a bunch of added bonus features for learning how to dance. And I was like, well, I guess I'm learning how to dance today. And that's where I learned how to dance, was the Shark Tale bonus features. But that's stuff like that you just don't get anymore. I wonder if they do that for Bond. That'd be fun.
I mean, the commentary tracks, like specifically Roger Moore giving his commentary on his movies, and like, you know, it's like, I really didn't like this part, and things like that.
Those are always great.
They're so good. And I went through a whole spell of falling asleep to those, just Roger Moore like lulling me to sleep. I'm a little like disappointed in myself, and I'll explain why in a second. We have a VHS TV that has the VCR too, and or that's I guess what it is. VHS TV.
The VHS TV.
I need to put that in our bedroom, because I still do fall asleep to Bond movies every night. Recently, it's been From Russia with Love. I start it, and within 3 minutes, I'm asleep. So I've been watching it for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah. But I have it on like Fandango at home. So I just stream it, and I feel like yucky doing that. But it's so convenient. I did it for years, just popping in the discs. And we do still have a DVD player upstairs, but it's right there. You just hit play.
It feels like you're cheating on your wife when you do that. When you have the physical media and then you don't put it in, and you just take the easy way out, and then it catches you, and you're like, it's a digital download, it's not the same, you know, like, and it's like a whole, but it just doesn't feel right not putting it in yourself. Again, the ritual, and you're almost paying homage to the movie of like, look, I'm putting in the work too. And you know, it's
like getting fast food when you could make a nice dinner.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
Which is okay from time to time, but you know, it's better for your body to do it. You know, to take that ritual, to take that extra time. And I actually feel that, not that James Bond is sitting around watching movies too often, but he is the kind of guy who appreciates the old fashioned way of doing things and slowing down and taking his time. That is a very Bond thing to do. I mean, he usually takes very good care of his appearance. He takes very good care of his car, a car that's much older than something that would be easier to maintain. I mean, he keeps a classic car in his garage. He likes that. He likes the old ways. He likes things that require a little bit more effort, but provide superior results.
It's beautifully said.
That is. Would Bond be the type of guy to pop in a Blu-ray, or would he pop in a VHS, or is he a real to real guy?
He gives a shit about watching movies.
Does he look like he gives a damn?
I think he has no time whatsoever for sitting down and watching a movie.
Oh my God. But it does feel kind of, there's something that feels really weird about giving into convenience, because at the end of the day, that's why streaming is so popular. It's convenient. You don't need to buy a Blu-ray player. You don't need a DVD player. You don't need to buy the right format in the right region and blah, 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 blah. It's convenient. And but because
is it though? Because I mean, you need a two spreadsheets and a calculator to figure out what movie is streaming where, what service carries it, how much does it cost. I can't keep that straight.
And that's what I mean with giving in, because then you're like, I guess I'm not watching that movie, and you're right. You're giving yourself to the streaming gods, and it's like, no, you gotta. You know, sacrifice
that
lane.
Control what you watch and when you watch it.
That's
whereas
right.
if you own the movie, it's yours forever, and you can just put it in and watch it whenever you feel like it.
Hell yeah.
What, you know, it's just saying that sentence right there. What makes Bond home media, that home experience so special? You know, why is it so special to own something physical and watch it at home? Specifically, I mean, we've mentioned traveling. We haven't touched on like versus the theater experience, but that's probably going to come up here in a moment. But what makes the watching 007 at home like a special event?
I think it's bringing a little bit of that escapism into your everyday life. It's bringing the adventure and the style and the music and all of the things that we love about the James Bond films. It's bringing them into your home, literally, and making it part of your living space. And you're not living in the film, but the film is living with you. And I think that is a really special experience. And that's one of the reasons why we watch these movies again and again and again. It's because we want to have that experience. We want to bring all of that goodness of Bond into our everyday lives.
I love it.
Hell yeah.
I love it. You know, I'm not to rewind back about falling asleep to Bond, but like the physical media of it all. I am going to put our VCR TV in our bedroom and start.
You inspired us.
You're good in the kitchen too. Those VCR
yes,
TVs.
Right. I need a second one. You said we inspired you to start falling asleep to Bond. Well, you inspired us to fall asleep to Bond on tape again. I still love buying Bond physically. I've since gone back over the past like year or so. And if I see it out in the wild, I'll buy another copy. Like yesterday I bought a tape. I bought Die Another Day on VHS sealed.
I don't even have that.
Oh no.
Yeah, we have
that's
it sealed.
When I made the switch.
We'll have to hook you up with a copy. That's for sleeping. Yeah.
That is not, by the way, a good Bond movie to fall asleep to, because I've begun in my head to rank what are good sleepy time Bonds and what are not so good sleepy time Bonds, and that is not a good sleepy time Bond at all.
I love that you said that, and like I almost want to do a follow-up episode all about that, because I feel the same way about certain Bond movies. There are certain ones we've never fallen asleep to, Margo. Which one is your number one cozy, hey, I'm gonna fall asleep to some James Bond tonight?
I think any of the Guy Hamilton movies are great. Man with the Golden Gun is a good sleepy time Bond. I think You Only Live Twice might be the best sleepy time Bond. Diamonds Are Forever is very good. Even, believe it or not, Never Say Never Again is an excellent movie because it has that like kind of jazzy score. It's not as brassy as some of the John Barry ones. It's very evenly lit, and there's nothing too jarring in the cinematography or any of the style. There's no like loud noises. It's not the most exciting Bond movie, but that makes it a good sleepy time Bond.
That's so good. I mean,
it's very beige, that movie. Very, very beige.
Very beige.
We've never seen it together, right?
Not yet. Okay. We will do an episode on Never Say Never Again someday.
Ooh, stay tuned. Weren't you guys just talking about it? There's like a whole Reddit thread about... No, that's Frasier. Best episodes to fall asleep to.
When I discovered that, I realized that there are people out there just like me.
It almost makes you think, like, is anyone unique out there? Do we have like any unique factors? Like, why are we all living the same life? But
we could start that subreddit for Sleepy Time Bond.
That'd be good.
Sleepy Time Bond.
Easy.
That's good. That was not going to be like our original channel, but we originally were going to go the route of Bond in bed. And we were going to watch these Bond movies in bed because that's how, that's why we didn't go that route.
And then we were going to win.
You save that for the OnlyFans. That could be so easily misinterpreted.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah.
That's our Patreon. If
we were like Bond in bed or a good squeeze, really?
Like, really good squeeze.
But we were watching these movies together. Well, we would just lay in bed, pop it on, and eat Thai food. And we get cozy, and that's how the original idea came about. But some of the cozy is, I agree with you. You Only Live Twice is probably the number one for me. View to a Kill gets a lot of watch time. It does get a little violent and noisy by the end, but I'm already asleep by then.
Correct. License to Kill, not a good choice.
Never do.
A lot of screaming, a lot of gunplay.
The Pierce Brosnan era rarely gets sleep time. Same with Daniel Craig.
GoldenEye starts out kind of quiet, so you could do GoldenEye, but other than that, the beginnings are way too noisy.
Yep.
Are there any Craigs that you guys...
It's funny. I do, not often, but sometimes I do fall asleep to Spectre. And Quantum of Solace, but obviously with no volume on.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's me. That's a me thing. Sorry. I don't know.
Quantum is the movie, and this is something that I also discovered that we have in common. Quantum is the new TV test movie when you buy a new television. And I have been doing this since 2008. Anytime I've got a new TV, I test it by playing Quantum of Solace. And when I found out that August does the same thing, I was really, really tickled.
None of us have a unique life. None of our childhoods have been, I swear.
Yeah. That's a good thing to bring up too. But like, yes, sound bars and new televisions, like that home experience and incorporating Bond in that has been something I've put into my life and here, you know, small world stuff. Kyle does it also. And how many other Bond people are doing that kind of thing?
We have people everywhere.
Oh, this guy. Nice callback. I get that one. I finally get one.
With, you know, the Bond home experience being so special versus at the theater.
Mm.
What does that home viewing experience offer that theatrical experience doesn't? I know that might be a tough one to go about, but you know, are there certain Bond films that or moments that are just better at home than on a big screen?
Well, my favorite way to watch a Bond movie is in the theater, surrounded by friends. That will always be, I think, the best way, especially a new movie, to experience it. Because you're laughing at the jokes together and you're on the edge of your seat together when there's something really perilous. And that is a great feeling. And that sense of community, that sense of we're all having this experience together is a good thing. But with the passage of time, when we're watching older movies, it's fun to watch them at home because then you can stop it. You can talk about it. You can go make yourself something to eat. You can fix yourself a drink. Maybe you have a discussion or if somebody needs something explained, you could do it easily. Or if you want to have a debate about what's happening in the movie in the middle of it, you can do those things. So that's an advantage to watching them at home. I do think it is more fun to watch movies with other people, because when I watch a movie that I've seen 100 times, like a James Bond movie, by myself, I tend not to concentrate on it. I really would have to focus and make a concerted effort to watch it without any distractions, without checking my phone or anything. Unless I'm showing it to somebody else or watching it with somebody else. And I think that the theater experience brings that even more strongly, where you're not distracted. All you're doing, you're there for one reason only, to watch that film. So there's pros and cons to both, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, Margot and I, we've had the pleasure of being with you and being amongst Bond fans and getting to see some of these older films. We recently were at Gather All West, mm-hmm. and got to see that Casino Royale on the big screen. And we're recently going, or semi soon, going to see Moonraker.
I finally understood your handle, because I didn't know what it was from. And then, was it Vesper? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And it was like Easy Smiles and Sunday Watches. And I was like,
expensive.
I know.
Expensive.
That's what you call it. You always say Sunday Watches.
I always say Sunday Watches. I mess up.
I don't know why. But like, and everybody in the crowd was like, But
yep.
Even without that moment, let's say, like, you know, that those are just, there's just so much value to rewatching it in the theater with people, or just even if you're going to be rewatching in theater over and over again, you just I feel like you pick up on new details a lot easier when the screen is, you know, 900 feet wide, you know, 100% fully immersed. But I think it makes a difference, you know, and that's why we're big advocates of, if you like a movie, go see it in the theaters multiple times. But you know, I honestly, like, I can't imagine under what other circumstances we'd be able to have the pleasure of seeing Bond films on the big screen as often as, like, we have, being part of this community. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just like, that's not something that we can find in the wild. And I feel like we're very grateful that that's, because, like, Quantum is a good example. Not a fan of the movie, but watching it in the theater, I was like, oh, this is fun. This is a good, this is a good, fun movie.
I agree with you. And it was fun because of the people, even more so than the movie. It was fun because we were all hanging out and we were all, like, laughing every time there was a joke, and we're all cheering when something cool happens. And that's fun. And that's something else that we're losing with streaming, is we're not all watching the same thing at the same time, the way that we used to. We used to watch everybody tuned in to watch whatever the show of the day was, whether it's Seinfeld, Frasier, 24, those are just the ones that I liked. we were all watching at the same time on the same channel. And then the next day you went to school and you talked about it. That doesn't exist anymore. But we still have a little bit of that, because we go to these movie screenings and we're watching the same film together at the same time, and then we can talk about it and we have a shared experience and it brings us together. It's a great thing.
Preserving something that doesn't exist anymore. I feel like that's, you're so smart. You really are. You'll say something and then I'm like, okay, my turn to talk. It was good. And then I'm like,
I'm just a movie guy.
Sorry, I'm just really smart.
I'm grateful that, you know, not only have we been able to see some of these movies, you know, with you, but amongst the Bond community. Something I've really been grateful for over the last, you know, several years, but certainly the last few years of doing this show, A Good Squeeze, is sharing these movies with Margot, introducing them to her at home. Like, the whole thing is watching James Bond at home and curating the experience about it. Have you, Kyle, have you had any, like, very memorable experiences sharing James Bond with somebody, but in the home, you know, whether it was on tape or DVD or Blu-ray, not necessarily going to the theater, but a significant memory of introducing someone to James Bond?
I've never brought anybody into the world of Bond with the same level of passion that I have for it. So you're a very lucky man to be able to have that. I don't know if Margot is quite as passionate about Bond as you are, but she's along for the ride a lot more than most people would be, which is super cool.
Well, thank you.
But I like to introduce people to Bond movies all the time, and I have slightly different approaches depending upon who the person is, how old the person is, how well I know the person, what their tastes might be. I'll typically ask, what era of film do you like? And are you a 60s person, a 70s person, an 80s person? And then I can tailor which movie to watch to that. I've brought some Muggle friends to some of the screenings when they've been re-released. We just did a GoldenEye screening last summer for the 30th anniversary, and a couple of my civilian friends came to that and were super into it, because that's a good approachable movie that just stands on its own as a good action flick. I kind of have, I don't know that I have one distinct memory of introducing somebody to James Bond. Had a really good time showing Skyfall to some of my family for the first time. Mm-hmm. I had a little party at my house when the Blu-ray came out. That was fun.
Nice.
And I like to bring different people when there is a new Bond movie in the cinemas, because I'm such a huge fan, people tend to want to see it with me. So I will go several times with different people as opposed to taking one big group, because that gets me the opportunity to see it more than once. No Time to Die came out. I think I saw it seven times. I saw it with my mom and dad. I saw it with my sister. I saw it with some friends from high school. That's always fun too.
That's great.
Do you, and this could be double dipping on that same answer, but with Bond and home media experiences, do you have like a favorite memory, whether that was, purchasing a VHS or watching that bonus feature for the first time, or, discovering it with a family member? Do you have a favorite memory, but also the opposite way? Do you have a least favorite moment? Do you have a worst memory with Bond at home?
I don't have any bad memories with Bond, but I will share a story that's kind of funny, I guess. For the longest time, I had my collection completed except for one. The one that was always elusive, because it was out of print for such a long time, was the 1967 Casino Royale. And that was always the missing Bond movie, and the one that was impossible to find. And I remember scouring the TV listings week after week after week to see, like, is anybody going to show this movie? Are they ever going to air this movie? And eventually, I don't remember if it was either Bravo, back when they used to show independent movies, or AMC, or maybe HBO, but I don't think we even had HBO in those days. But somebody was showing it, and I made sure that I wasn't going to miss it, and I had a tape ready to tape it. And then being so disappointed when I actually watched the movie, because it's not great. It's of its time. It's very silly. It's very hodgepodgey. There's some good ingredients there, but overall the film is just a giant mess. And it's a great soundtrack, actually. And there's a good sequence of it with Peter Sellers playing a pseudo James Bond like character and Orson Welles playing Lashif. And that part's great because it follows the book. But I was expecting Casino Royale, the Ian Fleming novel, James Bond versus Lashif, Soviet agent, all that kind of stuff. And this is not that. There's fembots and there's flying saucers and there's Woody Allen. Like, what is Woody Allen doing in a James Bond movie? So that after such a long anticipation and doing everything I could to track down this movie, finally watching it and being like, well, that was weird. What kind of acid trip did I just go on? And I'm, you know, only 13 years old. I don't even know what acid is, but that was a fun experience.
I have an oddly similar experience with that Casino Royale. I remember being horribly sick and, you know, falling asleep in our living room and waking up in the middle of the night. Couldn't tell you what time, but, you know, the TV was on still, and this bizarre movie was just playing on TV, and I was in and out of a fever, but I remember just moments, and those moments just kind of stuck with me for years. I was like, what was that movie? It was like Forbidden Fruit. Had no clue what it was. And it wasn't until I was 16, maybe, I found Casino Royale, the 67 one, in our public library and rented
it. Yeah, I remember getting it there too.
And I was like, that's the scene. This is it. It's Casino Royale, this fever dream of a movie that literally is a fever dream. I had that, and then I collected VHS tapes, and there was one that eluded me, and it was not, we'll say the Eon films eluded me, and it was Living Daylights. And had never seen it, never caught it on TV, and I was very proud of my VHS collection, but never had it. And I think I was 17, and, you know, VHS was no longer the popular, I don't even think they were not printing them anymore. This would have been like 2007. And my mother got it for me for Christmas. And I was like, where did you find a VHS of Living Daylights? That might, unfortunately for me, at least at the time, might have been like my worst home viewing experience of a Bond movie, only because I had hyped it up so much for myself. I knew it was beloved amongst Bond fans, and it was the last one of my collection. So finally watching it, I was like, eh, it's okay. You know, so if that's my worst experience watching Bond at home, I do enjoy Living Daylights, but as a 17-year-old, I didn't care for it too much, at least for me and my taste in my life.
It's good sleepy time Bond, but it's also one of my favorite Bond movies.
Yeah, there you have it.
And that's interesting, because that was one that I saw very, very early on, and the thing that I remembered about it was the car. And I had never seen anything like that before. That was the first James Bond tricked out car that I had ever seen in a movie. And that just blew me away. I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. And it still is super cool.
I go up and down on that movie. And like within the past few months, I've been going up with that movie. We did an episode on it a few years ago. I think I was down at the time. I go up and down. But that car is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
His watch, that tag, is one of my favorites. I don't know why. I love it.
Is this one of those movies that either people love it or hate it?
Is that I think most people love it.
Most people love it? Okay, cool.
It's been reappraised, I think. I think Daniel Craig brought a new appreciation to the Timothy Dalton movies that... And this tends to happen with James Bond. Whenever there's a new guy, we tend to slag off the prior guy, but rediscover the person two steps removed. Oh. So I remember growing up in the Pierce Brosnan era, it was all about like, yeah, Timothy Dalton, he wasn't that great. You know, nope, he didn't really make much of an impression in the role. He only made two movies. No women are fawning over him. Pierce Brosnan's the guy. He's the right man. Like it was finally a course correction. He was supposed to have been Bond in 1986. Now the right person's in the job. And then Daniel Craig was cast. Casino Royale, smash hit. Everybody loved it. And we kind of turned our backs on poor Pierce Brosnan. Like, oh, he was just a skinny pretty boy, and you know, he couldn't kill anybody. He'd snap like a twig. Daniel Craig's this rough and tumble guy. But that Dalton, he was tough too. And he did it before Daniel Craig. He was like the progenitor of the Daniel Craig style. So I think that that does tend to happen, and that's why Living Daylights, long way to answer, that's why Living Daylights has kind of been rediscovered and reevaluated in the last 20, 25 years.
Well, on the topic of that, actually, well, I'm just curious for both of you, how has growing up with access to Bond at Home, Bond media, various formats, how has that affected kind of like the anticipation of this new Bond era that's coming? Because I know everybody has kind of gone through a change in Bond, but how, you know, with your guys' circumstances, how you grew up watching Bond, how has that affected like your anticipation for this?
If at all. Cautiously optimistic. I think that we've got a completely new leadership team, which makes me a little bit nervous because Bond was a family business, and the people who were steering the ship, they lived that passion, and it was part of the fabric of their being. And I don't know that that will exist with Amazon Studios. I hope that the people that they put in charge, I mean, they've put talented people in play. So that gives me some hope. And the other thing that gives me hope is whenever there's been like the future of the Bond franchise looks uncertain, that's when they've come out swinging for the fences and given us an all-time classic. So I have a feeling that, first of all, Amazon's got the deepest pockets in the world, so they could throw trillions of dollars at this thing. But I think that they're going to really swing hard and deliver a really great James Bond movie.
Cool. Yeah. I'm along for the ride is how I would like to put it. I remember like my transition period was going from Pierce to Daniel Craig, and I remember being a real stinker on Daniel Craig before Casino even came out. I was like not on board. And then I saw that movie and I was on board, you know, immediately within the opening minutes. Now I was a young man then. So this is like my first transition in adulthood, I'll say. But I'm just going to sit back and I'm along for the ride. I'm not trying to create anticipations for myself. Although, like you said, they're making like an awesome team around this next Bond film. So I trust it's in good hands, and I'm just like, take the wheel. I'm sitting in the seat next in the Aston Martin. Just take me for a ride.
And the reason I ask that is my frame of reference for this again, and I keep changing it away from Bond media, because if I don't, then I'll be quiet the whole time and we just can't have that. So,
no, of course
like, yeah, God forbid. So, you know, my frame of reference is like growing up with like Disney VHSs and like DreamWorks and stuff like that. That was, you know, primarily what me and my family watched as a, you know, grown up.
And the puffy having boxes.
Them
clamshells.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they were great.
And you're watching, you know, movies like, you know, Snow White, which you would, they weren't showing on TV. That was the only way you were watching this movie was if you had it on VHS or DVD, well, I guess VHS at the time. So once that era, you know, having watched all the Disney movies, you know, within that frame of reference, once it came to the point where I was going to the movies for these new Disney movies, I was comparing them to the arsenal that I had grown up watching. And it almost put the new movies at a disadvantage, in my opinion. I came in expecting a certain thing based off of a history and a progression I had seen. So we're going from like, you know, early Disney to like the Renaissance with like, you know, Aladdin and, you know, Lion King and all that, Hunchback. And then putting these new movies, even like the new Pixar films, I'm always comparing them to that, which I shouldn't be doing, but that's my frame of reference for Disney movies. So I was wondering if that had any kind of weight for you guys in terms of that. I'm trying to manipulate
that's,
your answer.
That's no, human nature. I think we, whatever we grew up loving will always be the standard. And then things, you know, as time goes on, don't live up to that standard. I think that's perfectly natural. The thing that Bond's been able to do, though, that a lot of film franchises have not, is Bond is able to reinvent itself every handful of decades and find something new while still adhering to what makes James Bond, James Bond. I don't think that they're going to change the nature of the character. They might change the world around him, or at least this is what I hope that they're going to do, to make him updated to the present day. But I don't think that they need to change who Bond is, but it is time for a reinvention. It is a new world. And the Bond franchise has always been pretty good at doing that. So, like I said, cautiously optimistic.
You know, speaking of the future of James Bond, what do you feel the future is for James Bond in media, physical media? You know, is there something that's going to be lost or gained with it maybe just going to streaming? Or do you think there's going to be this, like, artisanal, this like a collector aspect to if they put Bond out on 4K and in 5 years, whenever the next one comes out, right?
That is something to worry about, because it's hard to find a physical copy of a new movie these days. And a lot of times, like older members of my family have missed out on a lot of really good film and television that's been streaming only. I was just having a conversation with somebody at work about Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and she said that, well, I don't have Paramount Plus. And this is somebody who grew up watching William Shatner and can't watch the new Star Trek series, which is actually pretty good. And if it was out on DVD, she'd watch it, but just, you know, is from another era where streaming television doesn't work. The thing that I think the nature of Bond brings, Bond tends to bring a little bit more of a traditional person, a more traditional moviegoer, a more traditional movie watcher, that perhaps they will continue to release them physically. But in general, I think that's unfortunately going away. You're seeing a lot of brick and mortar retailers no longer stocking any sort of DVD, Blu-ray, anything like that. I mean, I can't remember the last time I bought a movie from Best Buy or Target or something like that. But it's only on Amazon now, where you can find DVDs and Blu-rays. Sometimes those are even difficult to find. And I think it's only going to get more difficult. They're not going to continue to make physical releases in general, but maybe a big budget, high profile movie like a James Bond movie or a Star Wars movie or a Marvel movie or whatever will continue to have physical releases as well. I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too.
I buy them.
I fear, you know, we're losing our physical media. I'm hopeful that something like Amazon, where you're just saying like that seems to be the best place nowadays to buy physical media, is owning
James
Bond.
I've got another story about that later, but we'll get into it.
You know, they own James Bond now. They're producing James Bond now. Will they put James Bond on disc and put it out there for selling, or will they only want to put it on their streaming app? Right.
And if so, then only people with Amazon Prime subscriptions will be able to see the new James Bond movie. And I don't think that's right. I think that part of what makes Bond special, there's some statistic that it's like 1 in 3 people on the planet have seen a James Bond film. That makes Bond unique among most intellectual properties. Everybody knows who, even if they've never seen a movie, they know the name, they know what it stands for. They can kind of tell you like, oh, that's the guy who wears the tuxedo, or that's the guy who drives the car with the ejector seat. There is like an image of James Bond that has just permeated the public consciousness.
It's like the Beatles. Everyone's heard of the Beatles.
Yes,
if you're
exactly
not a fan, it's like exactly the same level of fame.
Perfect analogy.
Thank you. No, I'm joking. Sorry. Yeah. You said the most eloquent, like, whole just spiel on like this is why Bond matters. And I'm like the Beatles. Like, yeah. No.
But I mean, we could go into that because they both came about at the same time, mm-hmm. from the same country, from the same sort of climbing out of the ashes of World War II.
Who
the British Empire is collapsing. How is like the British pop culture going to remain relevant? And what is the public? What do they have to grab onto during the decline of their global prominence? They had James Bond and they had the Beatles. So those two things kind of go hand in hand, I think, in how they've grown and spread and just again permeated public consciousness.
We were talking to someone. Love Me Do came out.
We were talking to Kyles Taylor.
Thank you. Sorry. That's who we were talking to.
About, right. About just this.
That's right.
So talking with David Mason about the Beatles and Bond.
And Love Me Do came out the same day, wasn't it, as
Dr. No.
As Dr. No. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, whether it's Beatles or Bond, whether it's in the theater, but hey, whether it's at home, whether it's a marathon, VHS, Blu-ray, or streaming, we can have Bond in our lives if you choose to. And I'm glad we chose to have Kyle be the guy. We chatted with these nostalgic memories with our growing up, our introduction, and our current lifestyle of watching Bond, whether it's at home in life or at home in bed. thank you so much for taking the time to squeeze us in and joining us finally on A Good Squeeze.
Yeah, thank you so much
for having me. Oh, it's a great chat. I'm available anytime you guys want to talk Bond, Beatles, anything like that.
I was going to say, you're welcome anytime. Even if we're not recording, you're welcome to hop on.
You're just cool people. I enjoy your company.
I've really come to like you. No, I'm joking.
Yeah. Go figure.
As a thank you, I like to curate cocktails. And as a thank you for being our guest, with your blessing, could I make I don't know if it would be the Easy Smiles and
Sunday Watches.
The Sunday Watch cocktail. Yeah. Or the Kyle Barbeau cocktail. But with your blessing, I would love
Please
to
do.
Make that.
Yeah.
I've been drinking it tonight.
Thank you.
I've been drinking it tonight in this Yinzer cup.
Nice.
I think I need to go back to formula. It was
back to formula.
Back to formula. 2 weeks. 2 weeks. That's a whole different movie, but yes.
It's a good one, though. I like that movie.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Where can the people find you if they want more Kyle Barbeau in their lives?
I am all over Instagram. I am Easy Smiles and Expensive Watches on Instagram. That's the best place to connect with me. I've also appeared in a number of YouTube videos on both The Bond Experience and Bond's Apartment. So if you really, really want to go scraping the bottom of the barrel, watch the videos in which I appear. Sometimes I'm eloquent. Most of the time I'm not, but have a good time with that. That's where I linger around in the Bond community. And I kind of have a reputation for attending not all, but most James Bond events in the US and occasionally Western Europe. So that'd be a good place to meet. And, I'll buy you a pint of Guinness.
No. Oh.
We met Kyle at one of these Bond events, and it was great to meet you. Yeah. And we've seen you at all the other ones since, so he's not lying.
Kind, approachable, eloquent, just the perfect gentleman, makes a perfect impression. So
we're looking forward to seeing you.
I don't want to force people, I don't want to put you in a position where people are hounding you, but we really encourage it.
Get her.
Yeah.
You're very sweet.
I mean it, though.
Margo, where can the people find us?
Instagram and only Instagram. We are at A Good Squeeze, where August posts life updates, episode updates, updates about Bond and his thoughts and feelings about life, and how we squeeze a little bit of that James Bond into our everyday lives.
And you can hear us wherever you're listening to us right now. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play. And if you want to listen on the old URL, we're on Audio Boom. But yep. With that,
I'm Margot.
And I'm August.
And I'm Kyle.
And this has been
A Good Squeeze.